Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
A lot of angst and anxiety about the closure of the department, or the possible closure of the Department of Education. Secretary of Education Linda McManus said essential and legally required duties would be carried out. Thus far, it seems as though there are going to be 6 regional offices that have shut down: San Francisco, Dallas, Chicago, Cleveland, Boston, New York, and Philadelphia. 4 will remain open: Seattle, Denver, Kansas City, and Washington, D.C. Here to talk to us about it, Dr. Robert Hogan, professor and department chair of political science at LSU. Dr. Hogan, welcome to the show.
Hi, nice to be with you. Thanks for asking me.
This is obviously an unusual circumstance. You don't see this very often, where there's a move afoot to completely dismantle a department, a federal department. Your thoughts?
Yeah, it is unusual, and I think this is a reflection of the current president's his approach to governing is very different than what we are accustomed to and have been for a very long time, perhaps in the history of the Republic, in which you're governing. We normally think of presidents as gathering a coalition of support among his party and maybe the other party and letting the public in on what he's doing and saying, hey, we need to pursue this policy change and here's the way we're going to go about it. Trump's approach with the Department of Education is similar to his approach with other departments. It is to go about dismantling it and then piece by piece in a way that is rather jarring and doesn't have necessarily a plan, it seems, for what they're doing. The idea, I think, is to sort of pick up the pieces later on and sort of see what's left over. And maybe Congress will come in and then sort of straighten things out. But it's a very different approach to governing than we have seen ever in the United States. And I think it's to be seen how effective it will be, whether or not Congress will eventually step in and say, wait a second, we are a co-equal branch of government in the United States here, and we want to play a role along with you to make these sort of changes. A lot of these sort of changes are constitutionally questionable. I mean, Congress set up the Department of Education, funded the Department of Education, and now the president is going about systematically having one of his cabinet secretaries who runs the organization get rid of most of its employees. How can you actually have a working cabinet department if you have gone through and excised key personnel that are supposedly carrying out the will of the Congress and the president that made these decisions in the past. So this is a very different situation than we're finding ourselves in that I think we've ever seen.
You know, the interesting thing for me, and I kind of try to figure out, so that's the what, you know, the outcome of where we are today. Mm-hmm. And I always like to focus on the why. And it seems as though to me the bureaucracy is too strong. The bureaucracy knows better all the friction points, where to delay decisions, what the touch tones are, what you make folks have to, what hurdles you make them have to jump over in order to affect change. And I just seem to think, not that I support it, but I just seem to think that the Trump administration wants to move at lightning speed to get things in a position to argue about them after they've already taken the action, as opposed to in advance of the action. Because they will just delay, and there will never be a decision made. I mean, it's what happened in his first 4 years. But what's striking to me, just to use kind of the law enforcement analogy, and I want to get your reaction to this. We have concurrent jurisdiction. When I was a sheriff, you know, I recognized we had concurrent jurisdiction with the state and with the federal government on a lot of different charges that were out there. But the reality is the best place to handle that was locally. And I was looking at a New York Times article, an LA Times article about the California office that's being shut down. The major caseload that they were handling there were family and school staff issues, unequal academic instruction for disabled students, campus sexual assault, claims of unfair discipline meted out to students of color, and alleged bullying of LGBTQ plus students. Who better to investigate that than local school boards and state school systems? I mean, you know, they're right there. They can do it in a much quicker fashion. They're not dragging you through all the manifestations of federal oversight. It just seems that this whole system has become incredibly duplicitous in what we're doing. Your thoughts?
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, just leave it to the local people to solve their problems. We don't want any higher level of government involved. I mean, we've heard that before, and one of the reasons that
we have two layers already, you know, local and state. So, I mean, how many do we need?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of people would make the argument, especially the parents of children who have had who have disabled children who are not having their needs met. A lot of them might say we need the national government to get involved, because the states are often very constrained. Local governments certainly are constrained in terms of what they can do financially. And sometimes they need to be told, look, you got to do this. We have a national standard for, and I think that's the other argument here, the bigger argument really, is that you need to have a national standard for students with disabilities. As a good example, I mean, how should the local standards vary for students who have autism or students who have mobility issues? Shouldn't they have equal access, whether they live in a state and a locality that has lots of money or little money? And so the national government, you know, says that there is an oversight role for them. And you know, I think there are a lot of students who have benefited greatly because the national government was willing to step in and had the resources to step in. Oftentimes when if you're fighting the local school board, you have no one to depend on but yourself. And a lot of people don't have the money to hire an attorney to make the case for them. So even if there is a national standard, you also need some national enforcement mechanisms. And I think that's what that is indeed what the national government was doing here with the in the Department of Education. And I should point out that that's the big area that was cut. It was in the civil rights and in the disabilities portion of, I mean, those are where the largest cuts in employees has occurred.
Well, because the other choice is to go to the Department of Justice, the Civil Rights Department, which, you know, most of the mobility impaired and other forms of litigation are actually presented to. Again, at the federal level, you have this duplicity going on where you have each individual agency wants to have their Office of Civil Rights. And
sure.
You have the umbrella agency of the Department of Justice. It just doesn't seem very efficient when you start partitioning all of this out. And a lot of the work that could be done between these departments and local government, you're really not compelled to do so because, you know, you've got this office sitting around. And even some of the lawyers that they talked to in his office said, we have too many people. Doing this.
Well,
and the reason is, once you start fragmenting out, you're feeding the monster.
There's no doubt. There is often mission creep and bureaucracies sort of expand beyond what they were originally intended to do, and they are duplicating the work of other agencies. And I think a reasonable argument could be made for almost any federal agency, any state agency, any local agency, that efficiencies could be created. And I think that's part of the argument against what Trump is doing right now, is that they're not really looking at efficiencies. They're not doing it in any deliberate way. They're going in with the metaphor of the chainsaw is a good one here. They're just going indiscriminately cutting and doing away with large offices of people. And you're right. If there's duplication, think about that. You know, if the national government has been protecting the rights of people with disabilities in a local area, maybe the state has sort of pulled back because they realize, hey, the national government's doing that. We can spend our resources elsewhere. Now what happens is you're not going to have the national government doing it or the state doing it. So that's why you need a deliberate process here. And God, you know, you said earlier, you know, a lot of people were frustrated because nothing was happening fast enough. And there's a downside. There's also a downside to speed and swiftness.
Oh, no, I get it. But, you know, you got a 4-year president you had an 8-year president before, and it just seems as though a lot of these things don't change. And then you put the ideological overlay over this as to
Absolutely.
How much strength you
Right.
want the federal government to have or otherwise, as opposed to states' rights. And it seems to me that's the underlying friction here is who's in a better position to deal with these issues. You know, categories is allegations of campus sexual assault. I was a law enforcement agency. We had police on campus. We were better suited to do it than any federal agency and certainly than the Department of Education of the federal government. Yeah. I mean, you know, so you start looking at it at a granular level, you begin to see there's just a lot of things that their scope has run amok.
Sure. Right. But there are some issues that are so important, one could argue, that is not so bad if you have some overlap and you have some duplication. And I think that's what the argument some people might make on some of these sorts of issues. But this is a grand departure from normal policy making models of policy making that we're accustomed to and understanding how the system works. And it is tearing hell out by its roots in some way. And you got to think, what are the consequences of a lot of these things? You look at, I mean, one of the big things that's so shocking about the Education Department cuts is they want to do away with a lot of people who are there collecting data on information about student achievement. You know, I mean, to me, that's an extraordinarily short-sighted thing to do. It seems that one of the things you most want to do is understand how students, if they are achieving, if they are learning, we have these, you know, very long longitudinal studies that look at student achievement. We create these national report cards that give people more information about their choices with regard to schools and what kind of education their children are getting. And it appears from the reports that are coming out of the education department that is one of the areas that was most devastated by these cuts. So
the reality is that most of that information is coming from the state education systems. That's why. I mean, the federal government's not down here. They're not down here measuring this stuff. They don't even measure the outcomes relative to the grants that they provide all of these school systems. It's a joke.
But everyone recognizes that most
of that information is coming from the local school boards to the state system and turned over to the federal government. So we have a report on top of a report.
Right. So we have too much information. That some people believe that. But from another perspective, you want to be able to compare states, and I think that's what most reasonable people would want to do. You would want to look at state A, who's been utilizing this particular approach to curriculum matters. What do we see after 10 years? Do our students as well informed and knowledgeable as a state who's used a different type of curriculum strategy? If you can't compare states, you know, you're comparing apples and oranges and you have no idea what's going on. I mean, one way of thinking about what they're doing is they don't want to know information. They don't want to understand if policies are working or not working. And that's a big problem. I mean, you know, you can make lots of arguments for and against having an education department, but it seems like one of the best ones is it is a clearinghouse for information to know if students in a nation are actually learning things. And that's something that used to not be an ideological position. Everyone used to agree on that, especially if you go back just a few years. People know it's a long time ago, but the George Walker Bush administration, the second Bush, one of their big things was let's measure stuff, you know, let's test. And let's measure things and see if students are learning. This is what we most need to have. Now, people curiously on the right seem to not be very curious about these matters. So I don't understand.
I don't really believe that that's the case. I think what they want to do is they want the state to be more curious about these matters, because the reality is that. Where do we find ourselves today? Have we improved over the last 20 years? I don't think so. I think most of that data reveals that we haven't improved. And in fact, of the industrialized nations, we are going in the wrong direction.
Well, we wouldn't know that if we didn't collect the data, is what I'm trying to say here.
A lot of it that's out there is not only the Department of Education that is providing this information, but a lot of NGOs as well. But the fact of the matter is we're going in the wrong direction. And, you know, and I think we get back to scope always, and this is where I think that this is a byproduct of that. We're throwing carrots out there for implementation of ideological issues in education. We're spending more time on reading, writing, and arithmetic, and more on social issues, putting the carrot out there vis-a-vis grants in order to implement that in our school system. And I think a lot of people are just, they're sick and tired of it. And,
well,
you know,
you're asking, like, why are we doing certain things? I mean, that is the motivator here. I think you have a lot of people who have convinced the public that the school system is doing nothing but focusing on DEI and
I don't think they're talking in absolutes. I think that they're talking about a disproportionate share of time being spent there. It's the same thing in this state right now, and we don't have as big a problem as other states. But I talk to education leaders all the time. We have an ESL problem right now. We are consuming a lot of dollars teaching kids to speak English to the detriment of English-speaking students, because the pie and the amount of dollars is just so many. And, you know, the carrots being thrown out there by the federal government and our own immigration policy is burying our school systems in the present state. And having to deal with federal mandates on top of state mandates has made it really difficult to manage their budgets. And I get back to scope. I think that's what's completely frustrated. I'm not saying that this is the perfect model. I wouldn't do it this way. But, you know, I try to understand why we are where we are. And I just think people want effect change. They want to see change, and they want it to happen quick.
No, I don't disagree with that. That people want change yesterday. But I don't know that this is an approach that is going to be effective in the long run.
Yeah. Well, I there may be a clearinghouse where all of this is going to get reported to. I don't know. I haven't seen it. I'll try and find it. Maybe that's what their thought is, but it's going to be interesting to see where this ultimately ends up. This is a science project for sure, right?
Indeed. No matter what happens, it will be interesting to look back and see what happens. I mean, political scientists certainly, a lot of them may not like what Trump is doing, but, it will be interesting to see 10 years from now what it looks like in the end. Yeah.
What it means, for sure. Dr. Robert Hogan, as always, we truly appreciate your time and your insight. Thank you so much for joining us.
Nice talking to you.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
What is Dax, are you
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
We're trying to hook up with Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Davis, senior fellow and military expert at the Defense Priorities. And as soon as we're able to get him, we will have him join us. So in this conversation that we had with Dr. Robert Hogan, I mean, I really believe that's the issue here, is we've got this duplicity that's going on. A lot of this, it could be handled locally with local school boards, states. If you don't compel them to do so, you give somebody the right just to go to the federal government straight on, you know, and not give them a chance to really resolve any of these issues. You continue to have all of this inefficient way of dealing with this. And this most recent article in the LA Times that was posted yesterday, they have 1,500 complaints that they're looking at. There are 50 people in this office. Over the last two decades, that office has really become smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller, so it doesn't even really matter what administration has been in office. They have been seeing cuts into the Department of Education. And as was pointed out by Dr. Hogan, and he's right, you know, you have mission creep that's out there. A lot of that has to deal with the scope. And now you're seeing a bunch of cases that are revealing themselves of reverse discrimination and unfair or illegal advantages being provided to racial or ethnic minorities. And again, those cases as well are better suited at local school boards, state systems, giving them the authority to look at that. State attorney general's offices have the ability to conduct investigations into all of these issues before we start running out to the Department of Education. Sexual assault cases are one of the ones that they point out in this article. Well, that should be resolved with local law enforcement. You know, what happens is they're unhappy with the outcome of these investigations, and then they want to go somewhere else. And they'll go to the state in some cases. They don't like that outcome. Then they'll go to the federal government. And a lot of these cases are probably have that same life cycle, right? That same life cycle DNA in every case, and we're not actually looking at it. I'm sure somebody's looked at it, and I know there's been a lot of organizations that have looked at the manner in which the Department of Education conducts itself, and they're not the only folks that can ensure that folks' constitutional rights are not being trampled on. Yeah, the Department of Justice as well. And what's happened is that every one of these departments have created an office for civil rights. And so this mission creep has gone across this bureaucracy, and they always want to look at things from a systemic level as opposed to dealing with these individual cases. And in fact, one of the attorneys that was interviewed here that worked for the San Francisco office pretty much said the same thing, is that they oftentimes had pressure to bring the whole system under their investigation as opposed to dealing with the specific bullying case or whatever the case may be. And they wanted to take on these cases to get to a systemic issue. And to prove that there was a systemic issue. And sometimes there wasn't, but there was pressure to do so. Again, it's a good example of mission creep, of this ideology of, because the more of this you have, the more that you perpetuate the need for additional employees, additional dollars, and all of that being sent to these systems. And that's how the bureaucracy works. I mean, it's how individual departments within an organization works. I mean, I had the same issues as a manager managing the Jefferson Parish Sheriff's Office. You wanted certain department leaders within the organization They were engaged in mission creep. They wanted to get into this bailiwick or that, and we would become more of a vertical organization as opposed to a horizontal organization and take ownership of all crime in our totality. That's not what I desired as the leader. And it's obviously not what Trump, he doesn't desire that either. And that's why there's this partially dismantling of these organizations. And it runs contrary to what the bureaucracy's looking for, right? And you see this a lot in organization. And, when you talk to experts in organizational discipline and what they're doing, and sometimes you can't see the forest for the trees, and you don't even know what your mission is any longer. And I think that's kind of where this bureaucracy is. We've got a lot of money that we're spending in a lot of different agencies that it seems to me there's a better way of handing this money down to the locals. That's where you're going to affect change the quickest. That's where you're going to get the most immediate response. We're going to resolve those issues. That was my experience. We could do so better than most, certainly better than most at the federal level. There's a role for them, quite frankly. There were a lot of cases that we did not feel that we had the particular expertise, nor the ability to keep investigations secret. So because of the sensitive nature of it, and it may be that it was in the political corruption arena or otherwise, hand it off to the feds. They were better suited for it. Give them our confidential informants, give them all the information that we have, and let them run with the case. And there would never be this allegation that we compromised some type of political corruption case at a local level. But when you are always trying to increase that scope, you want it all. And you can't handle it all. You just can't do it, because locals and state are more in tune and better able to resolve a lot of those issues. And I, as I said before, I'm still not on board with the manner in which this is being conducted. This is a huge bureaucracy. They're moving at breakneck speed. I would be a bit more strategic in how I go about doing this, but I recognize there's not much time. He's elected to 4 years. And if he doesn't get a lot of this done in the first 18 months in office, it is not getting done. He's lame duck already. And that lame duck mantra grows with each passing day. And the other side, if there is another side, there shouldn't be, but there is. Let's speak in reality. Every day that goes by that they're not able to do something, they view that as a win. And that's part of the conflict that exists in the Democratic Party right now. If you look at the battle going on between the House leaders and the Senate leaders over this particular budget issue that got pushed off until the end of September, you will recognize that they want to delay, 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 and every day they delay, it's a victory for them. Every day loss is another day that you can't implement something and affect change in government. So if you voted for change, you have some that are fighting that and others that are for it. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Places to go, people to see. You won't be surprised by this, right? Mayor LaToya Cantrell this morning filed a petition for a temporary restraining order against the council in Orleans Parish Civil District Court relative to the recent ordinance of the temporary ban on official travel, on what is called non-essential travel. The mayor made a trip to Washington, D.C. The council's trying to find out what the heck's going on. And what does she do? She runs the court because that's a priority, right? She can't live without travel. Going places, got people to see, places to go. Of course, on your tab. That's what this is about. Nobody's preventing her from going out of town. You want to go out of town? Go. Pay for it. Because you're not bringing anything back. You only have months left in your term. You can't implement anything that's going to be strategic in nature and of any consequence. This is all about perpetuating your afterlife as the mayor. This is a classic example of an alleged leader gone rogue. Because now we're going to go spend more of your tax dollars to be able to preserve the right to travel at will wherever you want. I guess there's a couple of places in Europe that she still hasn't been that she wants to go. Maybe Africa as well. Who the hell knows? It doesn't really matter because we just spend. And what are we bringing back? Nothing. We don't even get along with the legislative branch of government. We're not talking to one another, right? So what is it that we can bring back that is of any consequence that's going to change the course of where we're headed for the coming months of this, the last months of this administration? It's easy, right? That's an equation that we can all figure out. It's nothing, zero, nada. So we can be excited about her spending money and the civil district court filing on a temporary restraining order. This could be interesting. And this could be really telling. If it doesn't go her way, there could be more restrictions coming down. Right? There could be more. And I would love to see that happen. Be careful what you ask for. You might get it. Hopefully it works to their favor. We'll see what judge this case gets allotted to. Somebody's lucky day. They get to see the mayor several times in advocating this position of traveling the world over on behalf of the taxpayer, doing the people's work each and every day. Wanting to travel to the last day in office. If she wins this, don't be surprised if, like, the week before the last day that she's in office, that she gets invited to some summit somewhere to talk about something or whatever, you know, Aspen Institute, this, that, whatever, you know, as a guest speaker on the city's dime, and she'll be off and running and going all over the place and, you know, like she's done before. 1 in 5 days in her administration, I think, was reported in the paper the other day, traveling. Beautiful. We'll be right back. We'll check in with Scoot to see what he has coming your way. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. Scoot joins us. What do we have coming up, Scoot? Do we have Scoot? Scoot?
All right. Can anybody hear me? Can you hear me, Newell? I can't. There's
I
new
can
equipment
hear you now.
Here. Okay, there it is. There we go. Can you hear me?
Can you hear me now?
I got you now. God, yeah. There's like I've been in my studio in my apartment at West End, and suddenly there's a new equipment here. Anyway, it sounds really great in here. I don't know what they did, but it sounds cool. So finally, there's going to be an execution in Louisiana. I say finally with, you know, mixed emotions because I'm ambivalent about the death penalty, but we'll talk a little bit about that. And it's important to remember what this guy did because he looks like a really nice looking man right now, and we're going to kill him, but it's important to remember what he did. So we'll talk about that and the Furry Act also coming up on the show today.
Scoot's headed your way, folks, with a great lineup. Stay tuned. Have a great Tuesday evening.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
Ugh, your clothes are too tight, yet you can't lose weight, even though you've tried so many diets. The reason you're having trouble losing weight could be a liver clogged with fat, and that is slowing your metabolism. Introducing Omicid, a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism so it's easier to lose weight, and it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Find out more and see the university studies at omicid.com. That's AlmaSed.com.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Knicks Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knicks, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knicks Menswear, your friend in style.
Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let Street Easy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.